Welcome, adventurer, to the Level Up Board Game Podcast, a show that uses your experiences and opinions to discuss board games and the gaming community. Join the heroes as they conquer perils such as meeples, cards, and miniatures, all in an effort to level up. You're listening to the Level Up Board Game Podcast.
Welcome, adventurers, to episode number 21 of the Level Up Board Game Podcast, the show that can now legally drink. My name is Patrick.
This is King Scott here, sipping away on my mead since I'm legal now.
Hey, thank you so much for joining us. In this episode, our feature review is going to be Black Orchestra. We have our second set of 10 feature reviews done and in the books, which means we're going to have our top 5 of the last 10 that we did. And our community discussion is based on what to expect and how to prepare for a board game meetup, which, Scott, that kind of ties in nicely with some recent events for us, doesn't it?
It most certainly does. It's almost like you wrote this with that in mind.
So this past Saturday, we had our first Level Up meetup at Black Lotus Pizza in Pittsburgh. Fantastic time. We had something like, 20 attendees there. Heidi got to take home a brand spanking new copy of Star Wars Outer Rim. Scott, there were 4 or 5, 6 tables going at a time. That just felt amazing.
It did, and I think what was really impressive with that is I was expecting a couple of my friends, and they did show up, but then seeing people that I have no idea who they are, I've never met them before, and they listen to us talk about stuff, and it's just amazing. It really does warm the heart a lot whenever you see these kind of things happening and people coming out that they support what you're doing. They want to have fun with people. They want to share their love of board games with everyone. It was just a great feeling in that room over the weekend.
Oh, yeah. And you know what? There's something special about gaming with people you don't know. Like finding out about their backgrounds, what games did they bring, sharing the laugh. You know, I do like gaming with that closely knit group dynamic. But having strangers, having people that you have only met online, for example, that gives you a whole different type of enjoyment, and it was really fun to do that.
It was great to meet these people, and like I said, we're doing this as fun. This is not our job. We are not professional podcasters, but
we don't run a Kickstarter.
No, and just the idea that we're doing this and people are coming out to join us in playing games, it's a feeling like no other, and truly I am thankful for everyone that came out.
Well, Scott, I know you have the Pittsburgh Renaissance Festival coming up in, end of July through October, but we do have the opportunity to squeeze in the next Level Up Board Game Meetup. Hey, adventurers, Future Patrick here. We have our next Level Up Meetup set for July 31st from 3 to 9 at a game store in Greensburg called The Vault. It's about 15 miles southeast of Pittsburgh, and we can support about 50 gamers. We're going to have some games that aren't even on Kickstarter yet and another giveaway, so help us pack this place. Bring a friend, make it a date, come game with us. Scott, I swung by Target today. They have some goodies that just showed up. Included amongst them, Ares Expedition, the Terraforming Mars, we'll call it Terraforming Mars Light game. This one came out before Kickstarter backers got theirs, and that raised a little bit of a fuss.
Yeah, that's surprising, because I know this has happened a couple other times with Marvel United came out in Walmart before Kickstarter backers got their stuff.
Being the community-focused show, I went right to the forums and I wanted to see what people are, you know, thinking about this and how the Kickstarter backers are reacting. Man, you should see the comments on the Kickstarter. Like, if you go on there and you search Ares Expedition, you can see the comments. There's folks that are not happy about it. In the forums on BGG, the rating. It's the first game that is brand new from a prominent company that I've seen that there are more ones than tens. And I mean wow. 2-1. People are just tanking the rating on account of this we'll call it a business decision.
Yeah.
You know what? I can kind of relate to that disappointment. If I was a Kickstarter backer, the concept of Kickstarter, I know right now what we're looking for is for board game companies to have success. And by backing something on Kickstarter, you're not even guaranteed to get it, let alone get it first. But Kickstarter does have that clause in there. You know, you're helping to bring a project to life. As the consumer, I read that as, if not for me, this wouldn't be possible. Mm-hmm. Now, I know better. It's Terraforming Mars. So they didn't need to go to Kickstarter at all. You could look at it the Kickstarter is a chance to get the 11 promo cards or whatever, the alternate art box, whatever. But if I'm backing something on Kickstarter, I expect to get it first. I was reading through one of the forums and somebody was making the counterargument that, well, they didn't exclusively say that anyone was going to get it first. I'm like, yeah, but that's like going to a restaurant and they say, well, we didn't exclusively say that you were going to get your food cooked. It's expected. If I'm backing it on Kickstarter, it's expected that I get it first. You wouldn't be able to do this without me. So I don't know. I thought it was interesting to see how some folks reacted with such disappointment. And oddly, how many people came to the defense of the company, which that's not right or wrong. I'm not taking a side here. I think I can relate to the folks that are upset.
Well, I can definitely relate to that because starting out with episode one, I talked about my BattleTech Kickstarter. And as of this date, I am still awaiting my BattleTech Kickstarter.
But you picked Wave 2.
I know I picked Wave 2, but one item came from Wave 2. Everything else was Wave 1. That was a mistake. I understand that. But it's just been one thing after another with COVID and the barge stuck in the Suez Canal, all these different things going on. And the thing about it is I picked up a copy of it at my local game store. So I have a copy of it already. It's just infuriating seeing that all these people are getting this, getting all the stuff that I'm supposed to be getting. I mean, even the small packs
but
of the
mess. You did have the option to do so. You could have gone with that either split shipping or only the wave. Let me ask you this. Suppose that you started seeing Wave 2 items in the store today while you're still waiting on your Wave 2 items.
Oh, I did. That's the
Wait,
problem.
That Wave 2 stuff is in the store?
I believe so, that there are the boxes of the mechs that I'd ordered that are in the store. And it's just infuriating. I mean, I'm to the point now, I'm almost thinking I'm just going to sell it whenever it comes here because my enjoyment of BattleTech is almost out the window. But
really?
It'll probably change whenever it comes back. So I'll probably get it and it'll be like, oh my God,
ago,
it's awesome.
You were talking about how great it is.
I know. But it's just been one of those things. It's just been building and building. And so, but we'll see. We'll see. I mean, I know I'll probably change my tune. I'm very easy to be coerced by just a tiny little twist of my wrist. And it's like, twist my wrist. Oh, okay. Yeah, I like it again.
Well, that's a whole lot of negative to start things off. Let's talk about some of the games we had the chance to play at the meetup and beyond. How about I start this time?
Okay, that sounds good.
Chakra. Chakra, this is a 2019 game published by Blam and designed by Luca Carleza. The theme is that you're taking these gems, which represent energy that flows through the body, and you're placing them on your own player board in one of seven different spaces, or chakras.
Chakras.
Once a player has filled up five of these chakras with three gems of the same color, the end game is triggered. You'll tally up points and see who wins. So let's talk about how we play this game. When you take gems from the shared board, there's a shared board in the middle of the table with a few different rows, each housing a few different gems. Three rows, three gems apiece. When you take those gems, you have to place them all into one chakra, even if they don't match the color of that chakra. So your seven chakras are seven different colors, orange, red, blue. Well, I don't need to list colors. We know what I'm talking about. The gems correspond with those seven chakras. So if you take three chakras from the middle column, you have a blue, a red, and a green, and you put them in the green chakra. Well, the green chakra is not full until all three of the gems in it are green. So what do? You've got to move that red, and you've got to move that blue out of there, ideally closer to their respective colored chakra. So you have these actions that you can take on your turn that'll move chakras up or down the board, ideally getting that blue gem to where it belongs and the red gem closer to where it belongs. Now, when you take an action like this, you use one of your action tokens, of which you have five, and they only come back when you take a turn to meditate. Not only are you going to recall your action tokens when you meditate, but you also get to take a peek at a scoring token on the main board. So each chakra has a point value for endgame scoring, but it's hidden. It's worth 1 to 4 points. So I might fill up green, but I might not know what it's worth, and I have to meditate to find out. I might have a decision to make on what chakra I might want to try and fill up next, and maybe through meditating, I can get a little direction on where to go. What's cool here is that if I see that Bob just meditated, and then he immediately started trying to fill his orange chakra after he got to peek at its scoring token, well, I can deduce that orange is probably good. So when I meditate, I might want to peek at the orange to confirm it, or I might just look at a different one and make the assumption, okay, I can deduce that orange is good, so I'm going to peek at purple and see what's under there. It's a solid game. It's for 2 to 4 players. We played for about a half an hour. It's a little bit longer than what I might call a filler game. I would imagine it could work for almost any age for that matter. Well, any age, we'll say 8 or 10. We'll say 10 and up. And I think it's going to give a rich experience for your gamer friends while you can still include a younger crowd.
I had a chance to play this before with our one friend, Jason, and I had a great time playing with it as well. The theme was somewhat on there. What did you think about the theme?
I would call it refreshing. It's not something that I'm going to typically gravitate towards. The artwork has like these meditating fairy pixie looking girls that are dressed up with this big flowery hair and the theme of trying to like get your energy in tune. It's different. You know, it's kind of nice to play something different. The colors are pink and yellow, and there is a part of me that's like, wait a minute, I'm a grown man. I'm not supposed to be playing and enjoying this. But it was refreshing. I thought it was kind of cool.
It seemed almost calming in a way whenever we were playing it.
Scott, your game on here is one that you've mentioned before, and I didn't see you playing this at the meetup. Tell us a little bit about your play of Seven Wonders.
Well, yes, I did not play it at the meetup, as we played a lot of games that we've already talked about on here. Seven Wonders is a game that I've loved for years since I first got it, and I've been playing a lot with a lot of people on Board Game Arena. It was designed by Antoine Bauza and published by Repos Productions. It came out in 2010. In this, you're a leader of one of the great seven cities of the ancient world. You gather resources, develop commercial routes, and affirm your military supremacy with your neighbors on either side of you. You erect an architectural wonder which will transcend future time. So you're building something that people will talk about for ages. Now, the Seven Wonders, it only lasts 3 ages, so 3 rounds. In each age, players receive 7 cards from a particular deck. Choose one of those cards, then pass the remainder to an adjacent player. So you're doing drafting. Drafting
yeah.
is something I love.
This is the first one that gets that drafting in.
Mm-hmm. Whenever you're playing, you have to make the decision, am I going to draft for me to be better, to make my wonder better, or am I going to hate draft to go against what the people on either side of me want in order to help them? It's a tough decision to come through. Now, each player then chooses another card from the deck they were passed, and the process repeats until the players have 6 cards in play from that age. After the 3 ages, the game's over.
Simple.
So, yeah, it's very simple. In essence, Seven Wonders is a card development game. Some cards have immediate effects. You put it down, boom, it happens. While others mm-hmm. provide bonuses or upgrades later in the game, depending on what card you play. Some provide military strength to overpower your neighbors on either side. So you'll know which card your neighbor is receiving and how her choices might affect what you've already built up. But mm-hmm. cards are passed left and right for, what is it? It's right on the first one, left on the second one, right on the third one.
Yeah,
so
alternates.
It's going to constantly change around there. This game is great because you never know who's actually winning at the time. You can't look at a board and say, oh, well, they got about 75 points. There's no way I'm going to catch them. The amount of choices you have are overwhelming, but it doesn't drown you. It doesn't make you feel like you're losing from the first turn. Now, I've taught plenty of people how to play this game, and first things first, they are overwhelmed with the amount of symbols on the cards. Luckily, they print out a big sheet to explain what each symbol is, and they actually put that on the back of the rule book. So you have 2 you can share with all the people that you play. You can play up to 7 people, which is another great thing with this game. The number of times that I've played this game and everyone that's learned it that say, I want to play this again right now, is unreal. I mean, truly, almost every time I've taught this, everyone has wanted to play this game right away again. It's so much fun. I'm ready to play this game at any point in time whenever it comes out.
It is a bit of a modern classic, isn't it?
Most definitely. I mean, it works on so many levels with the drafting mechanic. Great game. If you haven't played it, give it a try. If you have, pull it out, play it again. Realize what a great game it is.
Let's restate that, because a lot of folks, I'm sure, have played Seven Wonders. We have a lot of new listeners, a lot of newer gamers amongst our listener base, too. And you know what? If I got into the hobby in 2017, by then, Seven Wonders is not, you know, it's kind of old news. It's not one of those big Kickstarters coming out. If you have not played Seven Wonders, play Seven Wonders. Scott, would you call this a good gateway game for the drafting mechanic?
I would say so. There's a lot of cards involved with it, but the amount of choices involved with those cards usually come up repeatedly. It's not like each age you're going to be faced with a whole new set of decisions. Mm-hmm. Your first round through it, everything else is based on that first round. So all your decisions will be slight tweaks from the first round and then second round to the third round. Very slight tweaks to those. And I think that it is a very good intro to drafting.
Well, another one that I had the opportunity to break out for the first time at our meetup was Die of the Dead. This is a 2021 game by Radical 8 Games, designed by Mark Stockton Pitt and James Allen. So Die of the Dead, Day of the Dead, and it's a dice game. You see what they did there?
And if I might say, that one has a great presence on the table. It looks fantastic on the table. Yes.
I'll get to components, because they're pretty cool. In a game of Die of the Dead, players are going to be gathering souls in the afterlife and preparing them to return to the land of the living. Now, you do this by ascending a soul up steps. Don't think like on a grid or anything. Think literally steps built out of cardboard. The first person that gets a die onto level 9, the final step, will win the game. Now, this is a dice game. Each player is going to have 15 dice to work with, and the core mechanic is really simple. There are four action cards in the middle of the table, and on your turn, you choose one of them, and you carry out its actions, and then play passes to the next player who's going to do the same thing. Easy. Now, above these actions, there are coffins. I mean, really nice cardboard coffins with beautiful artwork. Think of your Day of the Dead, like traditional Mexican, what do they call that, a sugar skull?
Yes, yes.
With the floral prints around it. Just beautiful. And these coffins are going to house dice. The four actions that you can choose are specifically carried out for the coffin directly above that card. As you play, you'll find that when you're able to put dice into a coffin, it's typically only the first coffin of the four in line. Now, the trick is that in order to ascend a die on those steps, you have to be in the fourth coffin in the row. So included in these actions that players can take is the ability to move the coffins. This is actually pretty simple. You're going to have actions that will give you the ability to shake the coffin with all the dice in it, carry out something based on what you reveal. But amongst all that, if there's a one showing on any of those dice, all of the coffins shift to the right, with the one that's in the four slot coming back around to the one slot. Now, this game's tricky. And here's the catch, Scott. The only coffin that ever has the lid off that people can see what's in it is in the first position. Yes, the coffins move, so this is ever-changing. When that one coffin in the one slot slides to the right, you put the lid on it. By the time it gets to the fourth slot, things may happen to modify what's in it. If I have most of my dice in that four slot, it's like, oh, I'm going to be able to ascend something, and somebody moves the coffins, oh, geez, I'm back in the one slot. I'm telling you, we had a really good time with this. The coffins move, making it ever-changing, which makes it really tough to keep track of which coffins you have the majority of your dice in. So, when you ascend from this fourth coffin, the action underneath it is to shake the coffin, crack open the lid, and basically, we'll call it a face-off. Whoever has the highest number on a die will get to take two of their dice, put one on step one, one on step two. Or if you're already some ways up the ladder, on the next two steps that you need to go. This was a cool component because it literally looks like steps that you build out of punch board. It's not something printed on the board. You literally, this goes in, insert it into that, and it actually fits in the box when you're done. And when you ascend, a lot of these steps have action symbols on them, on various steps. So as a player's die will ascend, they're going to get a little bonus too. This game's fun. Be it tricky, be it a little on the random side, it is fun. Scott, I don't care for dice games. They typically fall into that category of I'm not driving, I'm along for the ride. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But there is some player agency here. There are distinct good decisions and bad decisions. You just have to be aware that sometimes things aren't going to roll exactly as you planned. Sometimes someone's going to shift the coffins out of the order that you needed them to be in.
as I said, it had amazing presence on that table. Seeing the steps going up, seeing all the coffins, really fantastic. You guys were laughing constantly, having a great time with it, shaking up the caskets with the dice, throwing them down, all this kind of stuff. It sounded great. Is it overwhelming for new players? It's, well, let me put it here. Would it be an in-law approved game?
Yes, I think it would. You know what? You can have my copy of Die of the Dead. Not that I don't want it. You have to give it back. Try it out with the in-laws. Because the main mechanisms of the game are here are four actions. Select one and carry it out. Anybody can figure that out. I would be willing to play this with an 8-year-old. And while they might not play strategically optimally, they're going to understand how to play it. And yet, we could play it at the Level Up Meetup with gamers, and everyone understood what they were doing. We were still able to have agency over our turns. We were still able to tap into our strategic part of our brain. You know what I mean?
Strategery. Well, that sounds like a lot of fun. I'm anxious to give that a try if we get a chance before you have to send it back. The next one I had a chance to play, once again, I did not play this at the meetup. Unfortunately, it was so many games that we played at the meetup, I was trying to show people how to play them. There were games that we've already talked about. This game was another one I played on Board Game Arena, Solar Storm. It was designed by Aiden Lowther, published by Dronda Games, and it was released in 2020. First of all, the reason I went to play this game is I am a huge fan of the Danny Boyle movie Sunshine. I adore that movie. If it's on at any point in time, boom, I'm done. The front of the box looks like it should be an ad for this movie.
That is a cool box cover.
Yeah. In Solar Storm, your crew members on board a ship that has its energy core taken out by solar flares. Even worse, the ship is caught in the sun's gravitational pull, which is causing even more damage to your ship. It's only a matter of time before you and the rest of the crew are dead. You and the other crew members must repair the ship while using resources to divert what little power is left back to the energy core to get the ship up and moving. You must work together. In order to get the ship up and going, you have 8 rooms you need to make 3 repairs to. Once those are all done, you can then divert power back to the main core, get the ship going, you're all saved. Let me tell you, that doesn't happen too often. You die most of the time. Yes. On a player's turn, you can take up to 3 actions. You can move to another room. You can use resources to repair an area of the ship, and those resources come in cards. Or you can use resources to divert power from an area back to the energy core. If you have everything repaired in one room, you can then spend some more resources or your cards and divert power back to the energy core. So it's not like you have to get all of them done at one time and then divert all at one time. You can pick and choose as you go.
Okay.
At the end of each player's turn, the ship will take more damage. The level of damage will increase as the game goes on, of course. Players will win if they can direct power from all areas back to the energy core. However, players will lose if an area takes too much damage or if the resource deck runs dry. So you are on kind of a timer in order to get the ship fixed.
Yeah, yeah.
This was a fun game. I enjoyed it. It could be a fun game playing solo. But the theme somewhat lost me on this.
Oh, yeah?
It didn't seem like I was really fixing a spaceship to keep from flying into the sun. This could have been, I am a maitre d' at a restaurant, and I'm trying to keep everything going while we try and feed a restaurant reviewer. It could be something where I'm a plumber, where I'm trying to keep all the rooms water running in all the rooms of this house to go to the hot water pump. Theme could have been anything, but it is a fun puzzle. There is special actions in each one of the rooms that you'll be able to do to give you a little benefit, to help you, give you a little bump. But the theme of it just didn't grab me as much as I wanted to.
Do you think you came in with too high an expectation of the theme, or do you think that with or without any sort of preconceived notion of what you're getting yourself into, the theme just wasn't very present?
I think it might have been that I was too hyped up on the look of the box, which honestly,
it's a good looking box.
It is. It is a good looking box. The cards that show you the inside of the spaceship make you feel claustrophobic, like you're trapped inside of something. This could easily be turned into an underwater oil tanker place or something like that, like the movie Underwater. It could be anything, really. But as far as the playing, there's nothing that really made it stand out and like, wow, this is an incredible experience. I had a good time playing it. I mean, I would play it again if it came up, but it's not one that I feel that I'm really rushing out there like, man, I've got to play another game of this right now, which is unfortunate.
It's missing the X factor.
It must be. That's the only thing I can think of, that there could be something else put in there. I don't know if an expansion could change something there, but overall, it just did not grab me the way I wanted it to.
So I take it you're not going to go out and buy a copy, having played it on BGA?
I'm glad that I played it on BGA, because I really had that, like, every time I went on Amazon, I would have that there going, I'm going to buy it. No, not this time. I'm going to buy it. No, not this time. I don't think it's going to come up unless I find a really, really good deal for it. And even then, if I'm going to get it, I think I'm going to get it at a local game shop if I see it right there, because I would want to get the most play out of it immediately instead of sitting there and waiting 2 days for it to come and then me getting it and thinking, why did I order this?
Well, Scott, I'm sorry to hear that Solar Storm fell a little bit short of your expectations. I had one out on the table that you and I have played before, and I was like, you know what? This thing has to be at the meetup, and it was. I bought it basically not knowing anything about it. A game called Anomia. I picked it up at Barnes & Noble. Anomia, A-N-O-M-I-A. This is a game from 2010 by Andrew Innes. Several publishers were listed, so we're going to go with Asmodee. You know what? This is the second 2010 game that we had. Yeah, you had Seven Wonders. I have Anomia. Mm-hmm. This is a party game for 3 to 6 players. I'm not too keen on party games, but I felt like the atmosphere was right, so I brought it, and it did get to the table. How do you play Anomia? Every card has a symbol and a category. So, for example, an orange triangle, and it says TV sitcom above it and below it. Players are going to go around the table, flipping one card from the deck at a time and placing it in front of them. When two players have the same symbol, follow me here, the first person to name something under the category on the other person's card gets to take it and score it. Play then continues with the next person flipping up a card to place in front of them. So what's wild here is that it sounds so simple, but I swear the brain is not built to work like this. I find myself noting the words on my card instead of noting the symbol. I'll look at my card and it's that orange triangle and it says TV sitcom. And I don't know if it's just the way that our brain processes things. I need to be telling myself, okay, orange triangle, look at what everybody else has and look for an orange triangle to flip up. But in the back of my head, I'm thinking TV sitcom. And the person next to me, they flipped a square and it says famous boat. So now in my mind, I should just be tracking orange triangle, but I'm staring at their card, watching for that triangle. Whenever it flips, I can't help but make mental note of like, wait a minute, boat? What about a boat? It has nothing to do with what I need to do. So the game is tough with just this simple rule set, but it gets better. There are wild cards. A wild card has two different symbols. So if I have the orange triangle in front of me and I'm looking for somebody else to flip up their orange triangle, but a wild card might be pulled up and it might show, say, an orange triangle and a red circle. Now, if anybody, I have the triangle in front of me. Now, if anybody else flips a triangle, they're going to have a face off with me. Or if they flip a circle, they're going to have a face off with me. So now I'm looking for either of those things. And one might already be down when somebody pulls that wild card. You got to really quickly like start looking around the table. You're jerking your head like, oh, where's the red circle? Where's the red circle? Finally, as the game progresses, some players are going to find that they have a few cards stacked in front of them. Sometimes it's your turn, you flip a card, it just doesn't match anything. It comes back to you, you do it again, and so on. If you end up in a face-off and you lose, the person that beat you, they'll take your top card. This reveals the card underneath it, which in turn might cause another face-off. Dude, we had a ton of laughs with Anomia. It felt almost like an icebreaker for, we'll say, getting everybody loosened up for their gaming. A lot of fun. My friend Mike, Mike, if you're listening, you're terrible at Anomia. We're doing final scores. Everybody's counting up how many cards they won in a face-off. And I want to say the winner had 26, all the way down to like fifth place had, I don't know, 19. Mike is sitting there with two cards. He had two. So Mike's telling me it just doesn't work for me. My brain doesn't process that way. It was a lot of fun. It was an easy game to break out with strangers. I think it would work just as well with your buddies as it did. It plays in about 15, maybe 20 minutes tops. Fantastic game. In-law approved. This is one that you can take with non-gamers. It's one that you can take with your gaming group too. It just brought out the laughs. We really enjoyed it. That's Anomia. A-N-O-M-I-A. Anomia.
It did sound fun. I was in the midst of playing, I think, Emotep, and I didn't get a chance to play that. But we finished up just before you finished. And hearing all your laughs, it sounded like a lot of fun.
You had the chance to play this one at SCG. Did you join us like a month ago we got in a play?
No.
Oh, yeah. No, I thought you did. I'm sorry. Yeah, that was that must have been with Jason and Tom and a gang.
One thing that gets me is party games. Yeah, I have a love-hate relationship with those as well, too. I think it all stems back to Cards Against Humanity, where everyone loved that game and they played that game over and over and over. And it just got to the point where you would rather put bamboo sticks up underneath your fingernails instead of play that game again. But this one
That's
here.
That's a bit extreme, Scott.
Okay. I get a bit extreme. I deal in superbilies. But
is that superbilies?
Yeah.
That is a word?
Isn't it? I thought it
All
was.
Right, hold on. Hold on, this is, wait, are you saying hyperboles? Like you're being hyperbolic?
Hyperboles, that's the word I was looking for. All right, so I deal in hyperboles. Sue me. But I wonder, is this a game that you think can be played over and over, or would it lose its luster after a few times?
Well, as a party game, like for someone like me, I play party games, I don't know, 5 times a year. And I have enough of them that they don't necessarily, if one gets old, I just cycle in a new one. If you're buying this as your one party game, I could see a scenario where one person gets really good at it because they're playing it every time it's out. Furthermore, the cards in the deck, I will say to the game's credit, it comes with two different decks. So if you wanted to play twice, well, you don't want to use the red deck twice because you're going to see current political figure come up several, you know, you'll see it in both games. You're going to see, what did I say, TV sitcom come up in both games. So you just switch decks, and that can be kind of nice. They have other additions too. I don't know how they have a party edition because Anomia on its own is really a party game. They have Anomia X, which I understand is a little bit more on the adult side, and Anomia Kids. It's going to remove things like political figures or things that kids might not be, you know, name a zoo animal would be more appropriate for children. I don't see it getting old. I could see where if you're just not good at it, you probably don't. Like, I don't see Mike ever going to Barnes & Noble and picking up a copy. Scott, we've got a very cool review game to do today. Do you want to give us the walkthrough for this one?
That sounds great. Let me get in my gear here, and I will give you the walkthrough of Black Orchestra. Designed by Philip DuBerry and published by GameSleuth in 2016, Black Orchestra puts 1 to 5 players in the boots of conspirators out to work together and assassinate Adolf Hitler. At the start of the game, each player will receive a character card. These contain tracks which show your suspicion as well as your motivation. Also, each character has their own specific ability. The board, depicting Europe, is placed in the center of the table, and each location receives a face-down item. The Hitler token, as well as each of his deputies, are placed in their respective starting locations. Player tokens begin at the train station location, just outside of Berlin. Before beginning the game, you will prepare the stage cards for the game. There are 9 Stage 1 cards, 9 Stage 2 cards, and so on, all the way up to Stage 7. 2 cards are randomly removed from each of these stacks, and the remaining 7 cards are placed at the top of the board to create the stage decks. These are basically the events and actions that the game will perform to hinder your efforts. A conspirator deck containing the various plots and actions that you will need to win the game is placed next to the board, and you're ready to play. A player turn in Black Orchestra consists of taking three actions. Among these actions, you will find movement, drawing conspirator cards, and playing conspirator cards. But let's talk about some of the others. A player has the option to reveal an item token on their location, or pick up an item. This becomes important as items are not only required to fulfill a plot, such as dynamite needed for the car bomb plot, but they also can be turned in at various spaces to lower your suspicion. A player may use the special action listed on their character if they have reached a level of motivation to be allowed to use it. A player might use an action to conspire. This involves rolling three dice and checking the results. Any numbers are added together, providing additional actions. Targets will be placed on the dissension track, which lowers Hitler's military support. It needs to be low in order to successfully assassinate Hitler. Finally, the eagle symbol will raise your suspicion, which you don't want. At the end of a player's turn, the top card of the appropriate stage deck is revealed and his text is carried out. This can be a variety of things, but often it involves raising Hitler's military support, moving Hitler or his deputies, or Gestapo raids. Without diving too deeply into Gestapo raids, what that means basically is that when the raid card is revealed, any conspirator with extreme suspicion is arrested, essentially removed from the game temporarily. An assassination can be attempted when the players meet the requirement of an active plot. A briefcase bomb, for example, might require that you have a briefcase, a bomb, and a key while being in the same space as Hitler. The plot will outline how many dice you may roll to attempt it. You need to have as many targets or more as Hitler's military support, while also having fewer eagles than your current suspicion allows. If successful, the players collectively win the game. There are many ways to lose, though. One, if all players are in jail at the same time, the game ends. Two, in the seventh stage deck, there is a card called Documents Located that basically says the conspirators were all caught, arrested, and executed. 3. If the stage 7 cards did not include the Documents Located card, it might still run out of cards, at which point the players lose. There is more to Black Orchestra, such as various other types of stage cards that might be revealed, the locations of Hitler's deputies having consequences, and what happens while a player is arrested. But I hope this walkthrough gives you a general sense of how the game plays. So, how did the heroes fare in their epic quest to overthrow Hitler? Let's find out in the 8-bit breakdown of Black Orchestra.
My boy, we're pilgrims in an unholy land.
Hey, Scott, thank you for the walkthrough of today's review game, Black Orchestra. As always, we like to kick things off with the 8-bit breakdown bit number one. Why don't you take the floor for the art and components?
Well, the art and components are minimal in this. There are a bunch of chits. There are a bunch of cards. But I love the dossier cards that you have for the characters that you play. They look like you're actually opening up a folder, looking at a picture of the person that you're playing. It's dark. It's not a happy looking game, which it shouldn't be. It's just the look of the board, the look of the cards. It really does a lot to get you into the feel of this game. The art and components are minimal, but for a game like this, you don't want them to really be over everything else.
Yeah, I essentially said the same thing. I said that they're sufficient, but a couple things that I'd like to add. One, those stage cards have actual historic, not artwork, but pictures on them. And we'll talk about that as well in theme and immersion. Also, the board, I really love when a board has reminder text. So what can I do on my turn? It's all in the bottom left. What can I do? How do I attempt to assassinate Hitler? It's all in the bottom right. It makes it so easy to play the game when components of a game help me play the game without having to pause to look things up, to ask questions. Ooh, I love that. Also, the bottom of the board being the sort of map of Europe, the bottom of the board has like a silhouette with like some soldiers and some planes, kind of just reinforces that World War II feel. It feels World War II. It feels covert. And you said it, it feels dark. It feels like you're doing something dangerous. So let's take it over to theme and immersion.
Having the cards that show the actual pictures from World War II, once again, it's not happy pictures. These are down, dreary pictures. It's not supposed to be a happy game. And it feels weird that it's not supposed to be a happy game, but I had, okay, spoilers, such a good time playing this game. This feels almost like a more personal version of Pandemic, where Pandemic, you lose, everyone dies. But this one here, it's like you actually have the virus looking for you, not just randomly blowing up all over the world. This virus is looking for you. It's trying to find you and trying to kill you. I didn't think I was going to like this as much as I did. I will be completely honest. And the theme did so much to draw me into this game.
Oh, yeah. The art in this game pulls that theme right out. Images on the event cards are historical photographs with the name of the event that they represent. Scott, we like to say oftentimes that mechanics in a game can sometimes make the theme emerge. The thing that you're doing is drawing out theme. Black Orchestra is the poster child for mechanics drawing out theme. If you pull the Kristallnacht card, it makes the conspirators a little bit more motivated. And that makes sense. We don't like this guy to begin with. Now we see this. Oh, I want to get him. You turn in weapons to lower suspicion. You can turn in those items if you decide, you know, we're not going to need the gun, the explosives, the key, whatever. You can turn it in and you lower suspicion. Well, that makes sense. Here, I found this by the train tracks over there. Somebody's trying to do something. Well, little did they know that you're the one that's trying to do something. You just didn't need that item, but it lowers suspicion. How cool. The assassination attempts make sense. The recipe for poisoning is going to be, poison. A name tag, and a key. Get into the hotel, have a name tag of a chef, and poison, for example. It makes sense. Absolutely. You know what? There's a lot of games that are mechanic forward, and the theme doesn't feel very strong, or theme forward, and the mechanics feel kind of half-baked. Black Orchestra has very solid mechanics, and the theme is tremendous. They nailed it in both regards.
And one thing that I got out of this as well, as far as theme goes, there are some games coming from a miniature background, playing Warhammer and all these games, you have those moments that you talk about. Remember whenever I had those two units come up, do the pincher movement, and just obliterated that unit? It was awesome. We have talked, I don't know how many times, I know I've talked about how the three of us, we had everything there. We raided blow up Hitler's plane and we all got arrested. We have this story that came from this one game with chits and cards, nothing major, no miniatures on the board. But still, I have told that story so many times about this game. This game has such a great way of telling a story of what you're doing.
So is it easy to play? Is it hard to play? What do you think? Bit number three, complexity.
Now, complexity, one thing that I had a little bit that helped out with this game, there is another game called McKee. It's a solo game, and we talked about it on a past episode. You're playing a part of the French Resistance during World War II. You're trying to go to these different places and get these things to kill certain number of police officers, to get information to the American resistance, to do all these different things. This is more like a grown-up version of it. Like, this is how you get started. You get into Black Orchestra as your next step up. So as far as the idea behind going around, getting the different things to put it together, I already had a good idea on that. But it made it more complex. It made it much more of a storytelling game in that I'm actually doing these things, not just I need to go to the bakery and go here. This one, you definitely, we have to go to Berlin to get this, and then we have to go here to get this part. Oh, wait, there's that other part we need. So it made it more complex, but it didn't make it any more of a hurdle to get into playing it. Mm-hmm. Once you play a couple rounds, yeah, you're in good shape. And a lot of times you're learning with the other players because everyone's starting out slow. So you're all kind of opening up this story as you go along.
I put in my notes a little bit the opposite. I said there is almost no complexity here. You have some action allocations on your turn. One of the actions is to conspire, which requires rolling dice. You mentioned that one in the walkthrough, and I feel like you should do it almost every turn for the off chance that you get several more actions. It might take a turn or two to see how important that is. I said, you know, as you become more motivated, you know, that level 3, everybody gets to unlock a character-specific ability. I found that could be easy to forget, but beyond that, you know what I think helps? You know what tips me in that favor of no complexity or very minimal? Because this is not an overly simple game. All of those reminders in the bottom left of the board, when I'm like, okay, wait a minute, what can I do? Oh, I look at the bottom of the board. Okay, well, I'm not going to do that one. I don't even have an item to do that one. So my options are this or that. Okay, I'll do this. It's that simple to figure out what you're going to do on your turn. And then once you make that first action selection, move on to the next, flip the event card at the end of the turn, move on. I think it's just remarkably fluid.
Yeah, it's just complex enough to give you an enjoyable game experience.
Yes, yes.
You are the one that taught us this game. So what did you think of the rulebook?
Not only does this rulebook have large pages with several examples, the game board, as I said, has those reminders of actions in relevant spots. Put simply, the rules are not only in the rulebook, but also on the board. And I'm telling you, I often don't even need to reference that rulebook once the game starts because it's all right there in front of you. There's very few games that I've had to learn that are that simple to get right back into playing without having to brush up on how things work. So what about learning curve? I taught this one to you guys. Now, co-ops are a little bit weird because sometimes in a co-op, you can just coach. I mean, not that you can't do it in a competitive game, but it's beneficial to all the players if the teacher coaches people on what to do. And I try not to do that. What did you think about bit number 5, the learning curve?
Whenever you're playing a co-op game, a lot of times it does suffer from quarterbacking. It was kind of fun with us playing, you, me, and Tom, in that each time we kind of were a quarterback. So it wasn't like one person actually doing it. It was each turn as things became revealed to us. We're, you do that this turn, you do that next turn. It was more of us really working cooperatively. It was really based on whose turn it was and who was kind of leading that turn. But it didn't get to the point where any one person was really forcing their idea through on everyone. I know, how many times do we go, are we going to blow up the train? Are we going to blow up his plane? What if we poison him? All these different things came up at different points in time, and it all depended on what was revealed. What can you say? I mean, everything's on the board there too. You get to talk through it, and even the way you talk through it, it makes you feel like you're actually, all right, now this is what we're going to do here. And then now we need to do this.
And you're
part.
Reinforcing the rules with each other as you do that.
Yeah, exactly. Each item you need to make your plan come to fruition, and each plan, they all have letters on them. Might be poison has a P. You might need a key in order to open up the dresser that has the poison in it. You can just look at the letters if it's getting a little too much for you.
Mm-hmm. How about replayability then? Let's move to bit number 6, replayability and variability. What are your thoughts here, Scott?
Oh, man. This thing has been stuck in my mind since we played it. I know that we constantly say, we're going to play it again. I want to play this thing again because there are so many different ways to win at this game. And once you get close to the one time, you want to see how you can do the other one.
Ways to win, just to clarify for listeners, I think what Scott's talking about is that there are several different plots that you can draw from the conspirator deck. That there's one way to win, and that's killing Hitler, but there are several different plots to give you different pathways to do it.
Exactly. I'm sorry, I just got caught up on my words there. But yeah, you want to experience all the different routes through this game. I know I'm not going to be happy until I end up probably getting the copy of this game and going through and playing all the different routes to win. Now, what did you think about the replayability?
Well, those stage decks that you set up at the beginning, they have two cards removed from each of those seven draw piles, so you're not necessarily going to see the same ones, or for that matter, the same order. You remember how, like, we would flip up the key events, and some cards said, if the key event is revealed, just discard this and go to another, to the next card. Okay, so I don't have to carry out this action. Oh, but now the game just got a little bit shorter. That's one less action card, or one less stage card that we're going to see. There is some variability there. The game is still going to follow rails to some extent, as each stack typically does have a specific thing or two that it tries to do. Like, you'll start seeing the Gestapo raids at some point. Characters, they have minor differences from one to the next. You're not going to feel like you're playing someone totally different because you chose a different conspirator. It's a minor difference. But the replayability surfaces based on who you're playing with, the order of the stage cards at the top of the board, and then also, what do you have access to? Where are the items this time? What conspirator cards do you draw? How much, what do they call it, the illegal items?
Oh, yes.
How many
yes.
illegal items did you get to see? How many did you get arrested? Did you have to deal with someone being in jail? Those are all things that are going to give you a little bit more replayability. And man, if there's a game that you want to play again because you lost, this is it.
Most definitely. Now then, to our one that's is going to be a tough one for this, the shortfalls in the game. I have a hard time coming up with a shortfall, to be honest. It hit all the buttons of what I like. It scratched my brain in the way I'd like to be whenever I'm playing a serious game. So nothing really jumped out as being a shortfall for me. I mean, I could probably be picky and say, well, I would rather have a standee or a miniature of Hitler or Himmler and all these things to put around the board. But even still, having just the chits on there made it feel that much more like it was happening live right then and there at that time period. What did you think about this?
I'm not quite as glowing. I love this game. But it does involve rolling dice, which means you can lose to bad luck sometimes. Even in your big final assassination attempt, you can lose to bad luck sometimes. The events and the action cards can limit a player into having basically one thing that they need to do on their turn. Like, how many times was our suspicion just way too high?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, no matter what I do on my turn, I need to lower my suspicion. And I also said, like most co-ops, this is susceptible to quarterbacking. Even though we said that it's not as bad as some other co-ops that we've played, you could theoretically have someone say, okay, here's the plot that we're going to do. Now, you need to go there. You absolutely need to lower your suspicion and basically just coach everyone through the... I guess that'd be a coach, not a quarterback.
Well, they call it quarterbacking.
Like any co-op, this is technically susceptible to having that happen. That said, bit number 8, was it fun and who is it for? I say yes. This is fun. I like Black Orchestra. I like the history that the game so prominently displays. I like the game's not easy, Scott. Feels like you got to earn the win in this one.
Mm-hmm. I completely enjoyed this game. I had a great time playing it. I want to play it again. As far as who's it for, with the rule book, with the learning curve, everything's very easy to learn how to play this game. But this has got to be saved for your gamer friends. This has got to be saved for someone who's into history. This one is not going to be in-law approved. Whenever I take it and try and play this game, the theme of the game will be completely wiped out with just saying, well, you want to go there. You want to pick up that. You don't have that feeling of what's actually happening. So it's something that is definitely reserved for a gamer, not for, hey, it's Sunday afternoon lunch. Let's pull this out and play with the family.
No. And you know what? This game has tension, Scott.
There's
times
yeah.
when events are going to occur that foil your plans completely. Whenever you're trying to assassinate Hitler, you want to see his military support be low. And sometimes it's like, okay, I think we're set up. We can do it in two turns. And one of those events are like, there's a march. Move Hitler away from the train that you were going to bomb him on. Or his military support goes up by 3. And it's like, we're never going to get that in our die roll. We just don't have enough. We don't have enough cards to add enough dice to make it happen. And you're not back to square one, but it's like, oh, that the light at the end of the tunnel got a little bit further away. For me, for Who's It For, I said, you know what? If you have a group that likes co-op games, this is going to slot somewhere between Pandemic, which is a little bit lighter than Black Orchestra, and Spirit Island, which is heavier. If you like history, I think this is right up your alley. If you're a World War II buff, you have probably played this game, and if you haven't, get on it.
Absolutely agree. Get out there, get this game, play it as soon as you can. Black Orchestra.
So as Level Up likes to tap into the thoughts of the community, we wanted to find out what you guys thought about what to do, what to expect when you're going to a game meetup. So I posted in BGG, I said, hey, restrictions are loosening in many places around the world, and most gamers are going to have the opportunity to get back to their gaming groups. For some, this means having well-known friends over on an afternoon, but for others, it means going to a local store or a meetup in their area. We want to talk about things to do when you're going to a gaming meetup, specifically one that might be with people that you don't know. What do you think? How many games do you take? Anything else you should bring? How should you behave during gameplay? Anything to watch out for? Let us know what you think and perhaps surprise us with an idea or two that we may not have thought about. So, Scott, we had the opportunity to look over some of the responses. You said a couple of them grabbed your eye.
One of them was from Daniel. During the gameplay, I'd watch for whether the players are focused or want to socialize and try to follow suit. I really try not to be the center of attention in these settings and be viewed as a good player person that would get invited back to play another game. I might ask a few questions, but since I've played a ton of games, I'm sure that even if I don't completely understand the instruction, I'll figure it out or someone will recommend something. You don't want to be the center of attention, I don't think. I mean, some people want to be that, but going out playing with people that you don't really know, you got to go in and just slowly test the ice as you're playing. You don't want to go out and
dip your toe in the water.
It goes back to the golden rule, basically. Treat people how you want to be treated. That's the biggest thing. You don't want to come across as being overhanded, too strong, or anything like that at all. Play how you would want to have another person play a game with you.
I separated some comments from Paul. He actually gave a little bullet list here, and I thought, man, some of these are gold. He says, bring a game, but don't be disappointed if it doesn't get played the first couple of times that you show up. And you know what, Scott? We just had our meetup. I brought Tapestry and Yido, and I didn't get either of them to the table. I got a Nomia to the table. I got the 10-minute game to the table, but that's a good point. You know, bring what you want to bring, but you got to be willing to play other people's games. You can't force your game out there. Paul's next point, this is gold. Be prepared to teach the games you bring. Even as far as reviewing the BGG forums, etc. Man, you got to know the game that you brought. You got to know how to teach it. You got to know all those nuanced rules, all the gray. The last thing you want to do is get 3, 4, 5 people to play at your table. You got them convinced, oh yeah, you told them the theme of the game. They're juiced up. They're ready to go. And you crack open the rule book. And you're like, okay, on your turn, you're going to, even if you don't need to like go over the rule book, if you have to do a whole lot of refreshing, if you're constantly breaking everyone's immersion with the game, man, before you know it, the phones are going to be out. People are going to start talking to people at other tables, you know, while you're browsing through. Oh, it's just ruined the game for you. He says, take it slow. Hopefully you'll enjoy it and come back and you'll get to know other folks. This is a welcoming community. I think Paul's on to something here. You have the opportunity to meet other gamers. They're there to play games. You're there to play games. This is a match made in heaven. You're going to have yourself a good time. He says, spend money and tip the staff. If you're in a business, like we're doing our next meetup at a restaurant, we did our last one at the restaurant, for heaven's sake, you're taking up tables for 6 hours sometimes. Buy some food. Tip, if you have a server where you're at, tip the server, tip the bartender. Think of it as a rental for the space. And he says, bring games that can handle at least 4 players. And I think that's spot on. You don't want to be sitting there with one other person, especially if you don't know these people. It's going to be hard to convince one person to play the 2-player game with you. And man, if they're there with a group or if they're there with their boyfriend, their girlfriend, they don't want to be dragged off into one corner playing one game for the next 2 hours when, you know, this is their chance to meet people too. This is their chance to socialize. Yeah, I thought Paul had some really good ideas there. You separated what Josh had to say.
Yeah, Josh had some other good points here as well in that he had some bullet points. Some of them are very similar, which means that they are important and a lot of people think the same way. Be on your best behavior. don't goad people, don't laugh at people, make snarky remarks until you get a feel for them. You don't want to jump in there and be that guy that no one wants to play with. Sure, it's going to come along once you get to be more friendly with them, that you are going to pick on them in a friendly way. And it's going to be a lot of fun there, and everyone's going to laugh. Try to win.
Yeah, I'd say that's more for your tightly knit group.
Exactly.
Not for the group of, you know, you gotta use those social skills. In fact, do quite the opposite. Compliment players on a great game. Mm-hmm. You know what I never do with my friends when we finish a game is compliment each other on how well we did. But, you know, if it's people that you don't know, yeah, throw compliments. Be nice. You know, you're there to have fun. They're there to have fun. Boy, that's going to make someone's day if you say, you know what, when you move these pieces over here, and man, what a play. Even if you saw it, you can say, I didn't even see that coming. Yeah. That was just brilliant. Wow, what a play.
Yes.
You're going to make someone's day doing that.
Oh, exactly. And one of the things I always like to say, be the reason you made someone smile today. Mm-hmm. That's a big thing there. Another point Josh makes is try to win, but don't get stuck in AP, in analysis paralysis. Once again, you're playing with people you don't really know. Make a play. Just do it. If you lose, you lose the game. If you're so hung up on the idea that I must win, you might want
to
work on your
board game meetup.
No. You might want to work on your social skills a little bit. The final one he puts on here, and take this with a grain of salt, because I know I've run into some people that are like this. I know that a lot of people have a stigma of gamers. Take a shower, wear deodorant. No?
Yeah, the old... We used to go to Magic tournaments. You know how it's like a pride of lions and a herd of cattle?
Mm-hmm.
My buddy, who we all called Herbie, Herbie's like, oh no, it's a stink of Magic players. That was the plural proposition that he gave to a group of Magic players. You know, he says it in jest, but we've all heard of con crud.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's always that guy. First of all, don't point it out. I don't think anybody ever would, but don't point it out. You know, tolerate it. You know, maybe tell them about Level Up. Tell them, hey, you should listen to the episode 21. Maybe they'll hear us and they'll get it. But if you're wondering if you're that guy that might be a little stinky.
You might be that guy.
Get in a shower.
Yeah.
So we had another user. He says, try your best to fit in at the table you're at. You're going to have a very different crowd playing Bang the Dice game than you would playing Concordia. Yeah, that's absolutely right. If you're there for the fun time and you want to hoot and holler, don't sit down to play brass.
No. Don't play brass. But like you said, with our last meetup, you played Anomia. You played with people you didn't know. You were all laughing. You were all having a blast. It might not be the game that you want, but it's the game that you needed there to break the ice and bring people together.
And you know what? We did have, you know, that doesn't mean that we didn't have some of the more skill intensive. I mean, Dune Imperium, Root. There was a table playing Root.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the players had never played it before. They say, hey, will you teach us? Yeah, absolutely. Have a seat. They were in the mood for that type of game. They found that type of game. The person that's teaching it got players that wanted to play it. They had a good time playing Root. And like I said, Dune Imperium. Mike wanted to get that one to the table real bad. A couple of people like, yes, we wanted to play this. And yet, on the other hand, I was gravitating to people that maybe didn't want to indulge in the big, heavy games. So it is nice to see a variety of games and people getting to play the games that they're there for.
Definitely.
One more that I wanted to add, and this one I didn't find anywhere in the comments, but it's one that I thought, man, this is clutch. If it's a long game, if you're going to introduce a game to people, make sure that they're aware. And I say that because I wanted to get Yido to the table. I didn't get it to the table, but I really wanted to. It can be, with five players, a 2.5-hour game. And some people are not fans of sitting down and playing a game for more than, I don't know, half an hour, etc. Just make people aware. Hey, this one is a lengthy one. Are you okay with committing 3 hours to this? Is that all right with you? If you say no, it's okay. It doesn't bother me. But we do want to be able to play it to completion. Are you cool with that?
You just want to be considerate of other people's times. Play how you want to be played with. No, I don't want to say how you want to be played with.
That sounds so dirty.
But no, you want to make sure that everyone's having a good time. If that means you're going to be playing a game that you don't really want to play, but it makes two or three other people happy, hey, you know what?
Don't suck the fun out of it.
Yeah, don't be a fun sucker. it's time to go over our top five games of the last 10 that we reviewed. For those of you scoring at home, here are the last 10 games that we had on our reviews. We had Black Orchestra, Lonely Undead, Raiders of the North Sea, Deliverance, Red Rising, Beyond the Sun, Brass Birmingham, Puerto Rico, Third G, and Heavy Hitters, GKR.
This was a tough one to pick the five that I liked the most.
It was. I had an idea that I'm like, oh, this one's going to go in number one. And then I wrote down number one. I'm like, wait, that isn't the one I thought was going to be number one. Now, one thing to keep in mind, I did not get a chance to play Lonely Undead or to get a chance to play Deliverance. So I'm going to be batting 8 out of 10. You'll be hitting all 10 of them.
Right. My top five are taken from all 10. Your top five are taken from 8. So be it. Let's start with number five.
All right, so my number five was GKR Heavy Hitters, Giant Killer Robot. This one here goes back and it scratches my itch for miniature games. You are a giant robot going through this city, battling each other for the advertising rights to all these buildings. It's just a blast having these big things blowing up buildings, using what's pretty much a large t-shirt cannon shooting ads at buildings. It's fantastic. I had a blast playing it. It was a lot of fun. I know we had a lot of laughs while we were playing it. Heavy Hitters is my number five.
We sync up. This was not intended. My number five, GKR Heavy Hitters. You know where this one scratches my itches is I like that you pre-construct your deck before the game. You get to sort of customize it the way that you want. Those random sponsorship cards that come in, some of them are really, really cool. And then couple that with the fact that, like, let's be honest, you're playing with toys. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And we all like to play board games. If you're listening, you're a board gamer. Like it or not, you like playing with toys. I love it. You know, the reason Marvel is so big right now is, you know, you get to use your imagination and be something that you're not. GKR just scratches that itch for me. And I feel like I'm doing something extra fun when I'm moving those giant robots around the board. Really loved it. My number five, also GKR Heavy Hitters.
It's really funny that you say that your favorite part is the construction of the deck, and my favorite part was the idea of moving the giant robots around. So that really does go back to our entry into it with you playing Magic and me playing Warhammer. So it hits both those things. So I can see a Venn diagram of GKR in the middle of Magic and Warhammer.
What do you got for number four, Scott?
My number four is the one we just talked about today, Black Orchestra. This one, like I said in our review, it reminds me of a more involved pandemic. This time the viruses are SS soldiers searching for you. It's just such a great storytelling game. And as I said, we still talk about, or at least I still talk about, the time we almost killed Hitler by blowing up his plane, but then we all got arrested. It's just a fun game, a lot of fun to play that. So thematic, awesome game. Number four, Black Orchestra.
My number four was Theurgy. This was back in episode 13. We got to discuss this one with the designers. Man, you talk about a Kickstarter that should be $1 million Kickstarter. I remember saying that on the episode. This feels like $1 million Kickstarter. This is better than half the crap that pulls $2.2 million, and it's a bunch of miniatures with really simple mechanics. Theurgy is a rewarding game for someone who is outplaying their opponents. If you lose, it's because you got outplayed, and quite frankly, there's something satisfying about that. You didn't lose because the die roll. No, it's a strategic dudes on a map game. That's a rare find. Theurgy has it, and that's why it's my number four.
My number three, one that we just got a chance to play not too long ago, was Raiders of the North Sea. It's simple yet challenging. You plan your crew, making the plays, and realizing you just came up short is just so irritating. Like, you almost got everything. You're all ready to go. Oh, wait, I need that color of worker. Ugh. I still had a blast doing it. It made me think of different avenues to go through. Very simple, very straightforward, really just a great game. My number three, Raiders of the North Sea.
Beautiful production, too, and a lot of value in mm-hmm. that box for what it
costs. Oh, yes, yes.
Well, my number three was Beyond the Sun. I really, really like this game. I have a love-hate relationship. I think I said it last episode. I'm struggling all of a sudden, but you know what? I'm back on the winning track. I've got a couple wins in a row. I'm not back up to 500, but I just can't stop diving into this and seeing what's behind the next level tech. Who would have thought making, I don't want to say making a game out of a tech tree because there are so many more moving parts than that, but that is the shining element that makes Beyond the Sun different than so many other space games. And it keeps pulling me back. My number three, Beyond the Sun.
We think alike here at times. My number two is Beyond the Sun. This is one that has just drawn me back over and over and over. And unlike you, I don't have those wins to prop me up and make me feel like I'm doing something good. So even with losing, I'm still having a good time playing this game. There's nothing on there that looks pretty. There's nothing about this is like, oh, wow, look at those spaceships. Look at this. It's a very boring looking game, but the gameplay of building out the tech tree and figuring out what decisions you want to make, there's such rich decisions that you make each and every time that just draw me back. This is easily the biggest game that I've played the most times on Board Game Arena. Easily. Number two, Beyond the Sun. What's your number two?
My number two is Deliverance. Mm. And I know you didn't have a chance to play this, so it probably will not be your number one. Deliverance was phenomenal. I had the opportunity to play this on Tabletop Simulator. By the time this episode is live, it's going to be done on Kickstarter. I'm sure Andrew's going to have some sort of late pledge available. Man, just phenomenally immersive experience. It's so simple to understand how to play, and yet the decisions that you make are so profound. It's tense. You're on the edge of the knife. You can't screw up. You know, there's only so much room for error. There are multiple right decisions. So you have some agency over which path you want to go. You're leveling your character. Oh, I said in the episode, it feels like Diablo, how no matter what angel you choose to play, you have three different routes that you can sort of stat out your character. It felt good. It's got me so excited to get this thing to the table. I have a list of friends. I know, okay, Mike is going to love this game. And I know when I get this in front of Ben, he's not going to let me have it back. No. Fantastic production. Fantastic game. My number two, Deliverance. So it comes to this, our second set of 10 games, all of them in the bag. And one of them stood out for you as the best of the bunch. What's your number one, Scott?
My number one, I'm playing a little bit of an audible here. So what that means is my number one game of the last 10 that we got a chance to play was Brass Lancashire. Now, I know we reviewed Brass Birmingham, but a lot of things are very similar to this. So I'm putting Brass as my number one game. It scratches my brain in the way that I want a game to do. There are so many decisions to make. You're looking, planning your next move, your move after it, seeing where all the resources are. It just encompasses everything that I want in a great game playing experience. I had such a great time playing this game. I can't wait to play it again. Even if I lose, I know I'm still going to have a great time playing this game. So I got to say, hands down, Brass. Now, what was your number one?
Well, it's Brass Birmingham.
Woo!
Talk about a game that has you using your brain in every little aspect of what you're doing. You have to plan ahead. You have to play reactionary. You have to consider the turn order. Where are you at on finances? You're going to have to take loans. Everything is interconnected so beautifully, so beautifully. You're racing other people to do various actions. You're trying to fumble the turn order so that I can be, you know, go from fourth to first and get the double order. There's so many routes that you can go in this game. It's so good. I want to play it again. And then when I'm done, I immediately want to play it again. I don't want to do episode 22. I just want to play Brass Birmingham. It is that good. Deliverance was a close second. Mm-hmm. Everything else was definitely a few rungs down the ladder. That's how good Brass Birmingham is.
such a good game there.
Oh, absolutely. Scott, it's getting late. This whole recording in the evening is still bugging me, man.
We're making it work. It's all working out for the best.
Let's talk a little bit about how we leveled up since the last time we spoke.
Our last episode, I talked about going on vacation. I talked about going to this lake. I talked about the mosquito problems and the idea that it's very hot and the idea that fish nibble at your feet. Well, I came back from that vacation. It was so relaxing down there. It totally blew any expectations off the table. It wasn't too hot. There wasn't an overabundance of mosquitoes. It was truly a relaxing vacation. We had a great time. We played a couple games, and it was something that I didn't think that I needed, but I really did. Came back refreshed, and it was a great time. So my level up here was getting a good, relaxing vacation in.
Sometimes, man, that's what we need. Now, I'd say the show had a bit of a level up since the last time, huh?
I know. This is a little bit in the middle here. Yeah, I think we did.
Hey, first level up meetup was a big success. I want to say the freebie game giveaway, my wife said that we gave out 21 tickets. Hey, that's pretty good. I didn't think there were quite 21 there, so I'm thinking I might have, like, I don't know, torn two off or something at the beginning. But yeah, it was a success. I was very pleased with the number of people that were there, and hopefully we can continue to get other people gaming with us and get a chance to meet some people in the area and play more games.
Yeah, it definitely leveled up more than we thought. I know you were talking about it, and I thought the same thing. We saw the number of people that were coming. We thought, oh, well, it might be you, me, and two other people. But to have 21 people come out to it, that's truly remarkable. And we cannot thank you all enough for coming out and playing games with us. That's how the show leveled up. I said how I leveled up. Now, Patrick, tell us how you leveled up this time.
Well, Scott, we bought a house. Not for us, though. We bought another house to use as a rental. You know, I have a couple rentals that I've, you know, worked on, brought them back up. I mean, these things were dilapidated and, you know, using a little bit of handy skill and persuasion from, you know, persuading people that are more skilled than I to pitch in here and there. We were able to get the properties back up in order. Well, we got another house that we can work on over the next couple of months and hopefully get someone in there in September, provide a nice quality home for somebody. It's exciting. It's fun to do. You know, it's rewarding work, and I'm looking forward to it. So that is my level up for episode 21.
Well, that's a great thing there because, yeah, like you said, it's rewarding for you to work on the house, and it's also rewarding that you're helping someone get a place that they need and to get a place that they know is going to be a home for them. So that
I'm going to leave a board awesome game in the closet.
Oh, do it. Do it. I know I sometimes come up with these words of wisdom. Now, since I stole the reins from you, Patrick, do you have some words of wisdom for us this time?
Hey, future Patrick here. Originally, whenever we did this ending segment, I was like a deer in the headlights trying to come up with words of wisdom. I had nothing. But I do sometimes keep some of the funny excerpts of whenever Scott and I say something or do something. So here's Scott saying, and it's kind of funny. Thanks for listening. We'll see you in a couple weeks.
See you later, all.
Thank you so much for joining this adventure of the Level Up Board Game Podcast. We encourage all adventurers to check out our website at levelupgamepodcast.com. There you can submit your thoughts and audio to be used in a future episode. Please consider rating us on iTunes, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and join the Board Game Geek Guild, Guild 3722. Music for the podcast provided by Adam Haynes. Learn more at adamhaynesmusic.com. And remember, you can spend another night on the sofa, or you can get some friends together, get some adventures on the table, and level up.